Chapter 6. Sir Percival's Secret. 11. Walter Hartwright's Narrative.
On the 13th of October 1850, I returned to England. I still loved Laura, but I knew I had to live without her. First, I went to my mother's house. When she met me, she told me, very gently, that my love was dead. In the deepest misery, I went to Limeridge to see her grave. The countryside and the sea reminded me of the happy months we had spent together. I went to Mrs. Fairley's grave. There was a new inscription written on it. Here lies Laura, Lady Glyde. In the near distance, I saw two women with veils over their faces. When they saw me, one lifted up her veil. It was Miss Halcombe, her face sadly changed by suffering and sadness. The other woman walked towards me. I looked at her closely. She stopped in front of me and lifted up her veil. Standing before me, beside her own grave, was Laura, Lady Glyde. I cannot describe my feelings of shock and joy at that moment. Miss Halcombe said,
Walter, we must all go to London immediately. We're probably being followed.
On the train, Miss Halcombe told me everything that had happened since she last wrote to me.
When I woke up from my illness,
she said,
I found myself in a strange room. Mrs. Mickelson told me that Laura had gone to London, where she'd become ill and died. This terrible news made me ill again, and I was unable to leave that house for another 3 weeks. I then went to London to see Mr. Gilmore's partner, Mr. Curl. I told him I was suspicious about the circumstances of Laura's death. Mr. Curl investigated and told me that he saw nothing suspicious. I then went to Limeridge and saw my uncle. He told me that Count Fosco had accompanied the body from London and had gone to the funeral, which my uncle himself had been too ill to go to. The Count had left a letter for my uncle, telling him that Anne Catherick was back in the asylum, but she now believed that she was Lady Glyde. I left Limeridge and went to the asylum. I explained who I was and asked to see Anne. Imagine my feelings, Walter, when I saw my dear sister there in the asylum, and that everyone believed she was Anne Catherick. I gave the nurse £100 to help Laura escape. We came to Limeridge and explained everything to my uncle, but he said that I was a fool. He doesn't recognise his own niece. He's sure that she's Anne Catherick.
Laura had certainly changed. Her face was pale and thin, and her long suffering in the asylum had affected her mind, so that her expression was vague and her memory confused. Now the similarity between Laura and Anne Catherick was stronger than ever. Because of our great love for her, Miss Halcombe and I had recognised her immediately. But the Count's letter had influenced Mr. Fairley, and even the servants at Limeridge House had not recognised her. I found two apartments in the same house in London. I took one, using a false name, and Marion and Laura lived in the other, under the same name. I said they were my sisters. I spent my days drawing and selling my work at nearby shops. Marion cooked and cleaned for us. My one hope now was to prove Laura's identity, but Mr. Curl, having heard the whole story, said that it would be impossible. When I left his office, he gave me a letter to give to Marion. In the street, I noticed two men following me. I got in a cab and escaped from them. At home, I gave the letter to Marion. It was from Count Fosco. This was the letter.
I write, magnificent Marion, to console you. Fear nothing. No one will follow you or your lovely companion, if you leave us in peace. If Mr. Hartwright returns to England, do not contact him. Be happy, dear lady, with what you have. F.
The only signature was an F at the bottom of the page. Marion, I said, we must bring them to justice. We must give Laura back her true identity. Mr. Curl says we can't prove that she is Lady Glyde, so we must force one of them to confess it. The Count has no weak point that we know of, but Sir Percival does.
The secret!
Cried Marion.
But we don't know it.
Anne's mother, Mrs. Catherick, knows it, I said, and I'll find out what it is. Then I can use the secret to force Sir Percival to tell the truth about Laura. The next day I went to Mrs. Catherick's house in the village by Blackwater Park. Mrs. Catherick was a hard-looking woman dressed in black.
Say what you've come to say, and then leave,
she said in a cold, aggressive voice. I've come to tell you that your daughter is dead.
How do you know?
She asked indifferently. I can't tell you, but it's true, I said. Sir Percival Glyde was involved in your daughter's death and has committed a crime against someone I love. I know that he's your enemy as well as mine. I know that you know his secret. Tell me his secret and we'll both get our revenge. He has used you. He, a rich man from an aristocratic family.
Oh, yes,
she cried sarcastically.
A very aristocratic family, especially on his mother's side.
She stopped speaking suddenly, as if she had said something she did not mean to say. So, Sir Percival's secret was something to do with his mother. Mrs. Catherick said no more. When I left her house, I saw two men following me, but I did not care. I went to the village church and spoke to the parish clerk. Please can I see the register of marriages in this church for the years just before 1804, I asked. I followed the parish clerk into the vestry, a small building attached to the church. The room was full of old papers. The parish clerk took a register from a shelf. Those registers are full of important documents, I said.
Surely they should be kept more safely.
That's just what the old parish clerk said,
the man replied.
Not the one before me. His name was Catherick, but the one before him. He was so concerned about the registers that he kept copies of them locked up at his home, in case anything happened to the originals. Every day he copied down the births, marriages and deaths recorded that day. Here's the register for 1804 and the one for 1803, sir.
Did you say that the parish clerk before you was called Catherick? I asked in surprise.
Yes, sir. Well, I'll leave you to look at the registers.
I found the record of the marriage of Percival's father, Sir Felix Glyde, to Cecilia Elster, in September 1803. It was written in a very small space at the bottom of the page. The entry above, recording the marriage of a man called Walter, took much more space. The entry on the next page also took a lot of space, recording a double marriage. I wondered why so little space had been given to the record of Sir Felix's marriage. But apart from that, there was nothing unusual about it. I was disappointed. As the parish clerk put the register back on its shelf, I said, "You spoke of old copies of the register. Is there a copy of the records of 1803?"
"I think so."
"Can I see it?"
"Well, I suppose you can. The old parish clerk is dead now, but his son lives in the village. He probably still has the copies."
I went to the house of the old parish clerk's son and asked if I could see his father's copy of the register for 1803. He let me in and brought me the heavy book. I found the record of the marriage of the man called Walter, but the space at the bottom of the page was empty. On the next page was the record of the double marriage. The copy had no record of Percival's father's marriage. I realized that the record in the original register must be a forgery, added in years afterwards. The truth was that Percival's father had never married Percival's mother. I knew I had to get the original. It was not safe in the vestry, and it was the only evidence of Sir Percival Glyde's secret. that he has no right to his title and his property. As I ran back towards the church, I saw flames against the evening sky. The vestry was on fire. I heard the sound of a man crying for help. A crowd of people had gathered. "Someone's inside," I cried. "Who is it?" A man close to me said,
"It's my master, Sir Percival Glyde."
For a long time I had felt nothing but hatred for Sir Percival, but I could not watch as he burnt to death in the vestry. I saw a window on the roof. Quickly I climbed onto the wall beside the vestry, then onto the roof. Perhaps he could escape through the window. I broke the glass, but then the flames jumped out of the open space. Just then the fire engine arrived. Firemen broke down the door and went in. They came out carrying the dead body of Sir Percival Glyde.